Thank you for tuning in to the Rescue Mission Podcast, where we discuss real topics that affect real people. This is Jay Evans, and I've got my co-host Matt with me. Matt, how are you today?
I just came from the dentist.
How was that?
A little numb.
Okay, so if Matt's slurring his speech or sounds a little silly or anything, just know it's the effects of the dentist.
Not under the influence of anything illegal.
Okay. We have with us Judge Andrew Williams. He is an Allen Superior Court judge. Judge Williams, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing all right. We're excited to have you on today. One of the most popular topics that we have here on the Rescue Mission Podcast is when we talk about mental health. And you are a respected voice in that field, especially in Allen County. So just starting off, as we dive into the conversation, would you mind just telling us a little bit about who you are, what it is you do? To give people some background.
Okay. I am one of the judges in the Allen Superior Court, and I am in the civil division. And one of my responsibilities, in addition to having a docket of civil cases, is to hear all the civil mental health cases. So I have hearings every Wednesday afternoon regarding civil commitments. And I also get calls and other forms of communication regarding emergency detention orders, which I'm responsible for either approving or denying.
Okay. So what is a detention order for somebody that has no idea what those are that you interact with?
When an individual is in the middle of a mental health crisis and they are taken to one of our area hospitals, either by the police or family members or just show up themselves, an evaluation is done there by hospital staff.
Okay.
And as of July of last year, emergency room physicians and physicians in general were given the authority to hold people up to 48 hours to evaluate them. So if a person cannot be evaluated and treated within that 48-hour time period, then I'll get a call and they'll ask me for an emergency detention order so that the person can be held longer and whatever evaluation or treatment still needs to be done can be completed.
So it's done, you know, for the benefit of the person, for their safety. Is that what you would say?
Absolutely. That is the goal of it. And, you know, the purpose is to provide help to sure. people that need help that are in the middle of a crisis and to get them to a point to where they're at baseline when they leave so that, you know, they can function and go back to their daily lives.
Yeah. So how did you get into this line of work? Tell us a little about your background, kind of how you got to this point.
After I completed law school, I went to law school in Texas. I came back here and started working for a civil defense firm. And Judge David Avery at that time was the mental health judge. And he needed volunteer lawyers to come in and represent the petitioners in these civil commitment cases. Mm-hmm. So he asked me and lots of other young lawyers. That was around, I think it was about 2005. So I would help with those hearings, you know, every couple of months. I probably would be there for an afternoon. And so I was directly involved in the mental health hearings then until I took the bench as a judge in 2020.
And what was it like? Was that, had you had training prior to that for the mental health cases? What was it like to kind of step into the realm of mental health and things like that?
You know, I've never provided therapy or any kind of treatment service.
Sure.
But it was definitely eye-opening for me. I mean, from the very first time that I handled one of these hearings, you see things that, sometimes will make you cry, sometimes will make you laugh. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just it's a wide variety of issues that come before the court. It's always interesting, and it's interesting, not just because of what's going on, but because you know that you've got somebody there who needs help. Mm-hmm. They need assistance, and to be a part of that and be able to connect them with services and help them get the help that they need is very rewarding. I found it rewarding as an attorney. I find it rewarding as a judge.
Yeah. So you talked about getting connected with resources, and you're a part of the mental health task force, which is a kind of resource base. Could you tell us a little bit about the mental health task force?
I found when I first took the bench that there were a lot of people in the community that provided services or were involved in mental health that I just didn't have regular conversations with. And I believe it's very important for us to have open lines of communication as much as we possibly can when we're dealing with mental health issues. So I think it was around, let's say, October of 2020, October or November of that year, that I decided, you know, I just need to start getting people together and we need to talk and we need to see where we are. And one of the big things for me when I first took over responsibilities as mental health judge from Judge Avery was I wanted to learn as much as I could about our process and about the treatment that's being provided. Mm-hmm. I wanted to examine it kind of as someone with a fresh set of eyes who, you know, hasn't been doing this for 20 years in that capacity. And so having everybody come together from these different agencies within our community was helpful. It was very helpful for me to get the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And I think it was helpful for them to be able to talk to one another because, believe it or not, if somebody doesn't bring people together to talk, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Not because people don't want to, but you know, they have time pressures and other things going on in their lives. They can't, or, you know, they just don't have the time to do it. So when I formed the mental health task force, I had several groups that I wanted involved. I wanted the mental health treatment providers, the Parkview Behavioral Healths and Lutheran Hospital. At that time, St. Joe had an inpatient unit and Bowen Center. I wanted them to be involved, certainly. I also wanted law enforcement involved. And so I had the Allen County Sheriff's Department, the Fort Wayne Police Department. We have an individual from the prosecutor's office that comes and participates in these. And I also wanted somebody who could speak on behalf of the patients. So we have a representative from NAMI that attends.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that you learned as these organizations came together, or some of the exciting things? Because I imagine there's a lot of beauty that comes around. One of my favorite verses that we read in the Psalms is how sweet it is when brothers dwell together in unity. So it really is an incredible thing when organizations partner together. What are some of the exciting things you've seen come out of this?
Just a kind of a spirit of collaboration from everybody involved in it. I think that before I felt like there was this sense that you could blame people, things weren't going wrong. Mm. You know, you didn't have to accept blame yourself, or you didn't have to do any sort of internal examination. And I think that's changed. I think everybody recognizes and appreciates what the other people involved in this process do. I think that it's become more efficient as a result of our conversations. I think that everybody's re-examined the services that they provide. We very much want to provide services to people in our community that are worthwhile. Mm-hmm. We also want to be efficient. And the treatment providers that we have in this county, I think, are some of the best in the state.
So what advice would you give to somebody in a similar setting in a city or a smaller town that really wants to try to get organizations to collaborate? Because it can be difficult to get people from all different sides of the table to get together and have conversation. What advice would you give to somebody that's attempting to do this in their own context?
Well, I should say that, to begin with, as a judge, I recognize the fact that judges can get things done that other people can't, just by virtue of the fact that, you know, I'm a judge and the office has with it this authority that is instantly there. Mm-hmm. And so I also think that you can't wait for something to happen. You can't wait for somebody to make a move, for somebody to start organizing things. Just do it.
Yeah,
you're going to make mistakes. Yeah, you're going to there are going to be things that you wish you had done differently. You'll learn from it. You'll get better. But jump in and start doing something. All too often, I see when it comes to not just mental health, but many other things in our community, this inertia. Nobody wants to step out. Nobody wants to be the one to do it. And you just can't do that. We're not going to get anywhere if nobody does anything. So you got to get off the bench and get in the game.
Yeah. How do you encourage people to do that?
Well, as a judge, it's easier for me to encourage.
Right.
Than perhaps others. But, you know, I made phone calls to people, to the people that I did know. And I knew some of the people that played a role in mental health in our community, but I certainly didn't know everybody. I didn't know a majority of them. So I would call people that I knew and I would ask them, who should I call? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that phone calls are something that we neglect these days. There's something about getting a call from somebody and having them personally ask you to do something.
Yeah.
Versus that email, right?
Yeah. Versus the email. Email can easily be deleted, ignored. Phone call can't. And I believe that, you know, when you get a phone call from somebody, it's difficult for them to say no to you for a couple of reasons. One, because you're on the phone. And also, I think that they recognize that you've kind of gone out of your way to make contact with them and that you think they're important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that goes a long way. It goes a lot farther than an email.
Yeah. So I'm hearing there's power in a phone call in the way that it humanizes other people as well, because it's, like you said, it's harder to tell somebody no on the phone. It's harder to ignore them. And I'm hearing the power of connections. That's been a big thing for me. I remember when I first started, when I wanted to come work here, I reached out to somebody I knew that worked here. And I said, hey, I don't have any of the experience that they're looking for this position, but I've got a heart to serve this population of people. And they got me in at a very entry-level position, but it helped having that connection. So thinking about the people that you know, thinking about those that you can ask questions of. And one thing I think about in this dialogue about connections and resources, my background is in the local church. I was a worship pastor and a youth pastor before I came to the rescue mission. And the church, I'll just use the capital C church, doesn't matter what denomination, we have a hard time addressing mental health. We don't quite know what to put it in. Do you have any insight? Because I know you're well acquainted with the state of mental health in the city and the different voices that are speaking into that. I would just be curious to hear from you why you think the church may be hesitant. And there are some churches that are doing tremendous things. So I don't want to dog everybody, but I know that there are some churches that may not be speaking up in a way that maybe they should to represent their people. Could you just speak into that?
Yes. Well, first, let me say, I grew up in the church. I've gone to church pretty much my entire life. So I'm familiar with churches. Okay. And I'm familiar with the way that things operate. What I see from churches oftentimes is, first of all, the stigma I think is greater in churches. You know, people think that I'm saved, so everything should be great in my life.
Yeah.
And that's not the truth. And, you know, Jesus told us that wasn't going right to be the way. So, you know, there's that stigma, and then there's the reluctance to reach out for help within the church. So oftentimes I believe that in the churches, we see the polished facade, and we don't realize that underneath there's all kinds of things going on there that sometimes we can't even imagine. And churches like to do things within their four walls. I think part of that is a fear of giving up control to either other churches or to, you know, the public sector. I believe that churches are afraid that things will become secularized. Mm. And that's something that I've struggled with in how I have approached different church leaders and tried to get their involvement. I think there's a desire to do it, but it's how do we do it? And so far, I haven't been able to really crack that. But there are a lot of churches in our community that are doing things within their four walls to address mm-hmm. mental health. I think it'd be better if they reached out to one another. And I'm sorry for being critical of our churches.
Yeah, I don't think you're being overly critical.
But this is the truth as I see it.
Yeah.
It's what I've experienced. I would really like for the churches to step up, to reach out to each other, but also to reach out to those of us in the public sector that are doing these things in mental health, and together be a part of it, be a part of the solution. I think that any mental health treatment that it completely ignores the spiritual part of an individual is flawed.
Yeah.
I really think that has to be a part of it. I think it's an important component. You know, I'm on the board for one of the Y's here in Fort Wayne, and the Y always talks about spirit, mind, and body, that each individual has three separate parts. And it may seem simplistic, but I think it's accurate. And when we look at those three separate parts, when you talk about body, everybody pretty much feels comfortable with treating illnesses, the physical illnesses. You know, we have an appreciation for our modern medicine.
Yeah.
And we're okay with that. And there are a lot of options too when we're talking about treating physical conditions. Mm-hmm. Then you move to the mind, and it becomes a little bit more cloudy. It's grayer.
Yeah.
But still, we do have treatment, you know, that actually is pretty effective in certain circumstances. And we have that. But then when you move to spirit, people want to cut that out. They want to ignore that portion of it. And I think that's a might be getting myself into trouble like going into this, but I feel that is just a all too often neglected part of human beings.
Yeah.
And if we're going to effectively treat people, that's something we cannot ignore.
So what does it look like to treat someone and acknowledge the spiritual aspect of them as well? I realize that's a very philosophical question. I don't want to throw you too many fastballs, but I think that it's good for the conversation.
Well,
I think that there have to be conversations with the individual. You know, I very much believe in free will. We all have free will. We all have the option of choosing what we believe and what we don't believe. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, I can't think of a single time where I've ever offered to pray for somebody and they said no. Mm-hmm. You know, I've asked people before who I would say there's no way that this person is going to want me to pray for them. It seems very clear that from their attitude, their appearance, the situation, whatever, yeah. they're not going to want it. And I've never had a situation where somebody said, no, don't pray for me.
Well, I think you're touching on something that's really important, and you already touched on it, Jay, that the idea of treating somebody like a person, you know, like a human being. And I think that was a lot of what I had to learn. Starting here, I started, you know, in the same position that Jay did, working on kind of the front line. And you have to, you know, before that, you might have, and I don't know if I'd be this explicit with it, but, you know, you cross to the other side of the street, so you don't have to deal with the messiness of somebody with obvious mental issues. You can ignore them. And a lot of us have the luxury of being able to have that choice. But when you're working right in it, and you're there for 8 hours and it's your job to deal with that, you begin to start to find ways, I guess, of interacting with people and treating them with some kind of dignity. And it always surprises me a little bit when people who normally don't get treated well get a little bit of courtesy, a little bit of dignity that they can engage differently than they would have otherwise.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I think the beginning point for everybody, whether you're in mental health or not, is to recognize the fact that mental illness can strike anyone at any time. Mm-hmm. And if you think that mental illness is not a problem, or you think that mental illness doesn't affect you, just take a moment and think about friends, family members that suffer from mental illness, whether it's diagnosed or not. I would say that there isn't a single person who doesn't know somebody and know somebody on a very close basis that suffers from mental illness, whether it's anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, or you know, even one of the more serious mental illnesses like schizophrenia. We all see it in addiction. Oh, you know, addiction is unfortunately very, very common in our world today. So you got to start by not looking at it as it's us and them. We're all a part of this. We all live in this community. We all have mental illness touch our lives. And it's nothing to be ashamed of if you suffer from mental illness. And it's not something that we should ignore.
Yeah.
Would you say that, I think, certainly in the church, I've worked there enough and in other places, that mental illness often is a problem that we see it as a problem that needs to be solved versus a person that needs to be cared for.
That's a good point. Yes.
Right.
I think you're absolutely right.
Like, I need to get you. It's like a, you know, any of your children. It's like behavior modification. I need you to change your behavior right now. I need you to stop peeing on your bed right now. I need you to stop yelling at your brother right now, versus, you know, like, help me understand what's going on right now. I think this is not a scientific number, but we've estimated that well over 75% of the people that we see here have something going on. And like you said, I think they're probably well over half of the people who work here probably have something going on.
And to varying degrees. And, right. You know, I really believe that if we would have more conversations with each other, if we would talk more, a lot of the beginning, and I have no scientific evidence to support this. This is just me expressing an observation that I have in my own theory, which is that, you know, a lot of mental illness, I think, could be averted if we could just have conversations with people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, I think one of the biggest needs that we as human beings have is relational connections.
Yep.
We Absolutely. Want to be able to talk to people. We want to share our problems with them, and we want them to share their problems with us. We're all broken people. We all have problems, and to share those things is very, very important. And, you know, when somebody does start to talk about one of their problems and you recognize it as a mental illness, I think it's instead of trying to fix it, oftentimes the best thing that you can do is just listen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's powerful. And I think this conversation has been so helpful for a broad painting of listeners, whether it be staff members here, because we need the reminder, serving this population of people that may suffer from mental illness in more visible ways than others, it can be easy to become callous to it when it's something you see every day. And the reminder to humanize people, whether it be somebody you're treating, somebody you're trying to connect with, a loved one in your life. That's been my big takeaway from this episode, is humanizing people, humanizing mental illness. It's not just a problem that needs to be solved, but mental illness is something that affects people that need relational connections in their lives. So that's been huge for me. Judge Williams, thank you for coming on today's episode and talking with us about this. I really enjoyed our time together.
This was dynamite. Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Rescue Mission Podcast, be sure to like, follow, subscribe on whatever platform you're on. We appreciate you listening.